Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
FeedSpot loves us. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. Let's trip back a little bit to the dial phone, the phone booth, and see it come back again 4 years later. Remember Black Phone 1?
Black Phone was a movie that you and I both really enjoyed.
Yes.
It was Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son.
Yes.
Wrote it very much in the style of a good Stephen King short story. His son has got his style down. Best horror film, I think, that year.
Who would have known Ethan Hawke?
Ethan Hawke as the bad guy in a mask most of the time with his menacing voice, dangerous character, the grabber.
You can almost tell his success by the fact that his mask is immediately recognizable.
Oh, yeah. He's joined the pantheon of great horror film villains. Of course, a movie that was that successful, there's no way there's not going to be a sequel.
My estimate, it's a good sequel.
It's a great sequel.
Yeah.
I am so happy to be able to say that this is one of those rare films where the sequel is as good, if not in some ways better, than the original.
The changing it up to some godforsaken Christian camp in wintertime, ridiculous booth in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly. Well, of course, the original film was set in a small town in Colorado as the grabber was grabbing teenagers and they were disappearing. But this time the film explores the universe a little bit more. And this is more of the grabber's origin story. That's what I liked about this, is this film not only moves the story forward, but it also explores the backstory. So we get to fill in, who was the grabber? Where did he come from? Was the crimes that we saw his only crimes? And no, now we know there's a whole backstory to him. And in a nod to Stephen King and The Shining, this set movie is set during a blizzard at a youth camp in the mountains of Colorado, very remote, only a half a dozen people there. And they're buried under 3 feet of snow. So if you like those scenes at the end of The Shining, when they're running through the snow and the light is dark and somebody's chasing you, you're going to love this, because
there's really a nod to that. Just substitute Jack Nicholson for Ethan Hawke.
For Ethan Hawke. In a lot of ways, yes. Yes, only Ethan Hawke is a little bit more mysterious because he's a supernatural character, whereas Nicholson was just this deranged man who was under the power of the hotel.
Yeah. And while I'm not sure that Black Phone 1 or 2 is ever going to reach the heights that Nicholson did in Shining.
Well, you've got Kubrick running Shining.
It's interesting, isn't it?
One of the great directors and one of the great movie series of all time. Yes, this movie stands on its own very well. If you haven't seen Black Phone 1, I don't think you're going to miss out that much.
Oh, I don't think so at all. And with my memory, I might as well not have seen it. You have the memory that remembers all these details. I don't. That's why I like having you here.
There's enough information about the grabber early in the film that they'll bring you up to speed. If you miss the first one, then you can continue on. And I have almost no faults with this movie at all. The moments when the girl, the sister,
Gwen,
is in a dream are shot in Super 8.
Yes.
Which it gives you this very grainy.
Yeah. This is about as grainy as you're ever
going to
get.
Well, and I saw this on an IMAX screen, so imagine projecting Super 8 on an IMAX screen.
Yeah.
But it's effective. It works. It also saved them a lot of money, too.
This is the way the grabber is making contact, is through her dream, because really he's dead.
Right. I mean, he died at the end of the first one.
And that's how ingenious it is. It brings him back into dreams and then brings him back to the extent that he terrorizes everyone.
The child who can see the supernatural is a very common theme in Stephen King stories. And, of course, you had that in The Shining as well. You had the little boy who could communicate with the supernatural.
Well, you know that I just delight in anything that's close to Christian, Catholic, and Lampoon. and here you go. When I got to the people who were overseeing the camp.
The sanctimonious couple.
I just love it.
And she just lays into them.
and her mouth is really acidic. It's great. She's developed as a teen. She's developed.
And she's portrayed as the one who really is in touch with the afterlife.
Yes.
So when she lays into this ultra-Christian couple, she's doing so from a point of view of somebody who knows what she's talking about.
And Finn is there now more to oversee her.
We don't get as much of Finn in this film as we did in the first one. This film, because of her supernatural connection and her ability to communicate with the children who have been killed at this camp.
Yes.
This is interesting because this movie also is a nod to another Stephen King novel. I don't want to say, but if you've ever read the novel Bag of Bones, which is a very underrated Stephen King book that has been filmed, but I think was filmed as a made-for-TV movie, there is a lot of the story of Bag of Bones in this as well. The idea, and although you would say this one is Bag of Barrels, or Barrel of Bones, but it's very, very similar to that very effective story, Bag of Bones, mixed in with the setting of The Shining.
It struck me that there's a pedophilic theme here, particularly in one.
He's taking advantage of their youth and their inability to really stand up to him. And he's enjoying the fact that he is exerting power over these helpless children. This is all about power. It's all about him wanting to have power over other people.
And what do you think about heaven and hell?
Oh, wow, there's a loaded question.
As a Catholic boy, I've always been fixated on heaven and hell. I mean,
well, I'm Jewish, so we don't have heaven and hell. We kind of skip that part.
But you can look at it from the outside and look in and see how obsessed we are with these notions, these absurd notions.
And this film explores the concept of what hell is.
Yes.
Which is something that really, the concept that hell is this frozen, cold place that has taken every sense of good away from you, everything pleasurable, everything enjoyable, and left you only with the bad.
Thinking about what you're just saying, the visuals, for instance, under the ice are very good. How many of us have been on maybe ice skating or whatever and were worried about falling in? And while it rarely happens, in this case, we've lost three young people.
Young people who went missing years and years ago and were never found. And that's one of the things I like about this movie is this movie has a moment. It starts out with a momentum already in motion, dreams. They're not going away. And she's being drawn to something. And as that momentum builds in the second act, when they get to the camp, it picks up pace. And then when Hawk finally shows up, it becomes even faster because the tension builds. So there's this slow building tension throughout the whole film. The only real problem I have with this movie, if I have any problem with it at all, is there's an abrupt jump cut from the first act to the second one, where they're climbing into the car with tickets to a Duran Duran concert.
Right.
And the next scene, they're in a snowstorm, 3 feet of snow on the ground, pulling into this camp.
Yes.
And there's nothing in between.
No, in fact, they dropped that whole Duran thing.
it disappears entirely. Or
maybe just to put it in context.
How do you go to a Duran Duran concert in the city you're in and end up in the Rockies at a summer camp? There's no explanation because the driver is not the girl. The driver is her boyfriend.
Right.
And you know, how did she manage to talk him into this detour during a snowstorm?
I don't have many issues with it at all. In fact, I always like to see more of the grabber.
Yeah.
But I think they're smart to keep the grabber away too much. In fact, there's more here, would you say, than in
There's more of the grabber here than the first one.
Yeah, the first one. And I thought the first one's virtue was that we rarely saw it, that it was really contained in that phone.
Yeah. The phone and the communications with the supernatural, with the kids who died. Yeah. That was the element of the movie that really made the movie strong for me, was the idea of the supernatural. But always there's rules. And this is one of the things, when I was working with Stephen King in the 80s, he would tell me that his stories always had to have rules and limitations that the villains had to live by. So otherwise, the audience would never know when the villain is in jeopardy. You have to have the weaknesses. And he has to tell the audience what the weaknesses are. Otherwise, you just think that the villain is so powerful they can't be defeated. That, I think, more than anything, is King and Joe Hill's key to the success of horror, is they give their villains a weakness, let us know what that weakness is,
right,
and then we can see for ourselves how we might approach taking down the villain. And we also know when the villain is in jeopardy.
Our audience would be interested in other horror films that you might dredge up out of the endless memory of yours. So what do you advise about this film,
Ken? Well, for me, the fun of this movie also was remembering that I worked with Joe Hill when he was an 8-year-old boy on the set of Creepshow playing the little boy with the comic book. And now he's the fellow who's continuing, I think, in his father's legacy, even though his father's still around, and doing really good work. I don't see anywhere that this franchise can go after this movie. I think this is done.
That was going to be my question for you, and we can talk about that later.
But I say definitely, if you enjoyed the first one, go see this. And if you never saw the first one, still go see this. This is the year's best horror film.
But Ken, it must be very difficult to turn down the possibility of a third when the first two have been so good. Well, we've already talked about The Shining as a precursor or as similar.
A similar setting, a similar feel. The isolation, the snowstorm, the trudging through 3 feet of snow with the villain chasing
Less
you.
Less of teens, though. Not so much of teens. Maybe the little girls. There isn't much more about young people, which is where I think this Black Phone 2 gets a lot of its energy from the fact that we have now almost adults who have been through this before in Black Phone.
The kids are older. She's not the little 10 or 11-year-old that she was in the first film. She is having more complicated dreams now. She's now having the interaction with the supernatural, with those who died under mysterious circumstances and do not rest.
Well, I offer up only because it was alluded to in the film, and I'm sure there are many more alluded to, but The Exorcist, in which the unchristian Christian lady says that Gwen is possessed.
Yes, yes. Well, and when you see Gwen in the camp kitchen and the grabber, it can't be seen, but he's picking her up and he's throwing her around and he's spinning her around and she's bleeding. You could see why the couple might think that, because it does look very much like what Linda Blair went through in The Exorcist, because they're not seeing the grabber, but we're seeing the grabber throwing her around. But to everybody else, she's flying through the air. And that was a very effective scene, I felt. I thought everything that happens at camp really came together nicely.
Yeah. Now, can you think of any other horror film that you might want to introduce here? It doesn't necessarily have to be a pattern of this one. It's just one that, for you, what...
Oh, my gosh. What's a great horror film? There are so many styles. Exorcist is a great horror film. But you also have the extreme movies, the ones that you could not make anymore, like Last House on the Left, where the violence and the decadence are just so disturbing. Today, we're more mainstream now with the idea of the supernatural as the villain. It's a little more palatable. And that's where Stephen King was always the master. When you look at something like Carrie... And there's some influence of Carrie, I think, in this, too. The idea that you've got this young woman who has a supernatural connection that she can't control. The key to this, to Carrie, was you really genuinely felt sorry for Carrie. That was a curse that she could not overcome, and it was a terrible thing that befell upon her, in addition to having a horrible mother.
Would it be fair to introduce Nightmare at Elm Street or whatever?
Well, that goes into the slasher movie genre.
Yeah.
I don't count Black Phone as a slasher film.
Okay.
Slasher films have a very particular style that is repeated over and over again, whether it's Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. They're always this supernatural, unkillable man monster, usually with a knife or a claw as their signature killing weapon.
Yeah.
And you start out with a bunch of dim-witted teenagers who are off doing something stupid, and then he picks them off one at a time. And then throughout the 80s, this format just exploded.
Yeah, particularly babysitters were always vulnerable.
And then it became the idea that there was this one innocent member of the group who was a little more sanctimonious, and she was going to be the what we call now the final girl. She's the survivor. She's going to be the one that defeats the villain.
Oh, yes, there's
always one woman that that survives.
So do we have
the
that here? We do.
Well, we do, but this is not a slasher film.
Yeah.
So this is more of a supernatural
film. But how about when
film.
They cut the guy's head off or something? Was that one of the bodies that they brought?
Well, yes, one person's head was cut off in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie really...
But there's really not that much.
There's not that much, and if you're concerned about a lot of really graphic violence, there's not that much graphic violence in this movie.
Yeah.
This is a movie that you can go to without being grossed out.
Yeah.
I give it a lot of credit for that. It's not relying on the special effects makeup, the blood, the gore, to carry the movie along. And that was one of the problems I always had with the slasher films, is they relied on this, the gore. You're just waiting for the next gore scene is what it comes down to. Whether that movie is Pumpkinhead, or, you know, one of the Halloween movies, all you're really doing is enduring a little bit of talk before the next big gore scene. But this movie, like all great Stephen King, Joe Hill stories, has a story. The gore is minimal. The story is the important element.
Usually there's it's a remote spot, such as the campus.
Yes. Here. Certainly when you think summer camp slasher movies,
or
you're
Cabin
thinking
in the Woods.
Cabin
another.
In the Woods. There we go. The great Joss Whedon movie, which I love, which is a parody of and a satire, a very yeah. biting satire.
Ingenious because it's still scary.
But it does an ingenious job, as you point out, of exploring that whole genre and turning that whole genre into nothing but a government program.
Then I think there's another one that I remember with younger people that I've always liked, and I think I've mentioned it to you anytime I can. The Descent has always been a favorite of mine, and
I've
those
never
are the
seen
ones.
That.
And that wasn't one; those are the young women who were spelunking into caves. And, very, very good one.
And find a cave monster.
And then the most exotic. I don't think it has anything to do with what we're talking about today. I just have to mention a bone tomahawk.
No, I never saw that
all right,
one either.
So that's the one where you've got these cannibals in the West. There is a newer horror film from a couple of years ago that I like very much that's not like anything like this called The Platform. Did you ever see
it? No, I never
this
saw The Platform.
This is the one where there are various levels of incarceration, and they have food coming down on a platform, and it turns the worst of mankind as they
grub
for the food. This has been streaming, and I'm very impressed with it.
I like it whenever somebody can come up with a novel, untried idea, because literally, folks, there are hundreds of these low-budget horror films. I know I've worked on. I have a friend right now who's a horror makeup artist up in Cleveland. She works on them. It's a living. There's never going to be a lack of slasher, low-budget slasher horror movies made because they can be made on shoestring budgets. And if they get a theatrical release, they almost always make money.
Yeah. Well, now, Ken, does The Conjuring have any place amongst all of this?
The Conjuring is a supernatural horror film, part of a series.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of these films in the last few years. The most effective one that I saw in the last couple of years was The First Omen, which came out last year. All the Omen aside, which is a classic 70s film, but a little campy by today's standards, I thought The First Omen was a very, very good standalone film. Great acting, great premise. I really enjoyed it.
When we think about these horror films or slasher films, does that mean anything to you?
Well, Scream encompasses the idea of gore and horror.
Yeah.
It's sort of a code word.
Yeah.
The Scream Queens are actresses who are best known for their portrayals in horror films.
Right, yes.
I've seen conventions where they had a whole table full of Scream Queens of the 80s. They're signing autographs.
And these are ones where the formula, there are certain things you have to know that are fixed into this.
In the slasher films, yes.
In the slasher
films. In the Stephen King films, no. Each and every Stephen King film is fairly original. The story is pretty... not a slasher horror film.
Right.
And there is elements of it to our film
today.
Yeah,
Wonder. Yeah.
Yeah, the idea of the kids banding together up against the evil with some help from adults, but generally the adults are pretty worthless. Usually it's the kids who end up having to bring the thing down. And it is one of King's great classic novels. And the two-part movie that came out a couple of years ago was absolutely fantastic. I mean, when many people think of King, the first thing you think of is often it, if you're a more recent King acquaintance. If you've been around a while like you and I have, you think of The Shining, you think of Carrie.
Yeah. Pet Cemetery,
Salem's Lot. And all through the early 80s, there was just every year there was a big King film, Dead Zone, Cujo. My director that I worked with, George Romero, had the rights to The Stand for quite a while and was going to do a made-for-TV movie out of it. Eventually that didn't happen, but it did end up as a made-for-TV miniseries because that thing is the size of a phone book. Things I like about King and Joe Hill is they've steered clear of the cliches of the slasher horror films.
Right.
And each and every film and story is a really interesting, well-put-together story about horror, about terror, but with a very interesting character, an interesting villain, and interesting supernatural elements.
And then now and then you'll get a shot of a big cross, so you'll be reminded that we are in the Christian territory.
Oh, yeah. Well, and King did delve into that with Carrie. Do you remember Carrie's mother? The house was filled with religious artifacts and played so well by Piper Laurie in the first film. But then after kind of having a taste of that, King decided maybe that's not the direction he wanted to go.
That's what I like about Black Phone 2 is that there are all these elements that are so sacred to Catholic boys like me, but they're not prominent. You have to dig a little bit to get them. You have to be aware when they do come there. They represent those visions that we have had.
Well, and you're touching upon a good point in that in the movie, the purpose of this being a Christian summer camp is really to create a sort of portrayal of all the falsities of the Christian faith. The sanctimonious Christian caretakers of the camp, right. The way they're trying to suppress all the horror backstory of the place.
Well, and the most horrible images for us were of hell, even purgatory. Purgatory and hell. I mean, these notions that the nuns foisted on us.
Oh, yeah.
They should have been, horror filmmakers.
Very superficial portrayal of Christianity with the reality of his portrayal of hell through the character of the grabber.
Yeah.
So you're seeing his what he considers the reality of hell with the very superficial and ineffective portrayal of Christianity at the camp. He doesn't go too far with it, but he does make the Christianity more of a... He mocks it more than he serves it as a fence or as a power.
As we had mentioned in his movie time, he turns things around by putting it cold and frozen rather than hot as hell. But the one thing we really worried about in both Purgatory and that was how hot the flames were. And he just turns it around.
He turns that right around.
Know,
he says, no,
torture
it's
man.
Ice. It's ice.
All right.
And for me, that phone booth was actually effective. I know you didn't hear that crazy about the phone booth at the camp. On the edge of the lake is this lone phone booth.
It was laughable.
Yeah. But that is the means by which Finn can communicate with the grabber.
Right.
Of course, Gabby doesn't need a phone booth. She communicates through her dreams.
I love it. There's one shot where you have the actual phone mechanism it has on there about how it doesn't operate. It doesn't work.
It doesn't
out
work.
Out of order.
Yeah. Yeah. And when they tell him it's been out of order for years, and when he's not in, until he arrives, there's not even a receiver or a handle on it.
But you bring a healthy respect for phones and for the phones we used to have, not the phones we have now.
Communicating with the afterlife or with the people who have been murdered is also a common theme in Stephen King and Joe Hill stories. That was the case with The Shining, how Jack Nicholson's character communicates with the power of the hotel, the supernatural. But the other thing that I found really interesting about this film is the way in which, again, we're talking about the Christian element about it. At one point, had this horrible, horrible dream, and she goes into the boys' cabin, and she just needs to be comforted and protected. And, of course, the next morning, the big scandal for the Christian couple and for the caretaker is that she was in the boys' cabin.
Is it Gwen or who?
It's Gabby. Is it Gwen or Gabby?
It's Gwen, I think.
Is it Gwen? Okay.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they make the scandal of she went into boys' cabin.
That's right.
We can lose our license, which they probably could. And how unethical this was that she went in there when, in fact, she went in there for a perfectly rational reason. We know why she went in there. It was a good reason. They're so stuck in a sexuality that is completely non-existent in this
movie. Well, the nuns I knew would have planted a big X on this. if she's even near that bedroom.
Oh.
And I thought the filmmakers did a very nice job. There was nothing sexual about it.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. It is the terror of the horror of the hellish creature. And if these people were just a little bit more in tune with what was going on around them, they would see that they are experiencing the demons of the Bible, not just a girl who walked into a men's cabin.
Well, K.G. Kline, you were a long way away from telephone booths. We have our own terror in our phones that we carry around with us. In fact, we're carrying hell around with us all the time. So we have
Black Phone 2 playing in theaters now, and it can be seen on the big Atmos and the IMAX screens because they figured out this is one of the best films of the year.
Oh, that's good. That's a good hint.
Yeah, they've released it now in the fall, which is a time reserved for the best films of the year, so they knew they had a hit with this. In my opinion, it's the best horror film of the year. I say that with a grain of salt because my guilty pleasure favorite film of this year is Megan 2.0.
Oh,
I love that movie. But that movie, even though it's a sequel to a slasher horror film, it is not a horror film. It is a science fiction film, and that's one of the things I loved about it. So I will say, with the exception that Megan 2.0 is a science fiction film, I will say this is the best horror movie of the year.
And I agree.